Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 219th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a bi-weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. My guest today is Hamza Khan, who was originally from Pakistan. At the age of 8, he and his brother came to Maine to join his family in 2005. Their father had come on ahead to find work, and he moved the family into a home in Standish, Maine. Hamza attended Bonnie Eagle High School and graduated from University of Southern Maine with a degree in finance and political science just last year, in 2018. Presently, Hamza is the talent and diversity specialist for Bangor Savings Bank, and he's here with me today. So welcome to the studios, Hamza.
Well, thank you so much, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you so much for putting together this show, highlighting stories around New Mainers, and it's an honor to be here.
Oh, thank you. It's my joy in life. Do you have an image of what life might have been like on a typical Sunday in Pakistan as a boy that you might be able to share with us?
Definitely, definitely. So, you know, when people ask me, you know, or mention Pakistan, I have an image in my head. And, you know, I recall myself as a child. I was 8 when I moved here, and I think I must have been 6. I recall a very, very bright, sunny day. And I'm standing on my street. I see my dusty street in Pakistan, and there's no clouds in the sky because it's just the bright blue sky. And that's an image that I have in my head, mainly because of what I remember. The afternoons were extremely hot. There's almost no clouds. It was mainly just the bright sun. And I recall that image just as a child, as something that stayed with me. But on a typical Sunday, I recall, you know, we would be up. We would usually have a family breakfast. You know, generally, you know, Monday through Friday, we're going to school. And actually, even on Saturdays in Pakistan, it's because it's very similar to the British system, people will go to school. So on Sundays, that was our day off. We would have what we call naan chane, which is a traditional Pakistani breakfast, or halwa puri, which is another breakfast. So it would be one of those. Then we would play some cricket with friends. And as soon as it was 12, we would have to come back home because it was definitely way too hot by that time. So my mom would probably call me home. And after that, we would have to nap. And the evening is really when people would go out, you know, even if it's humid or even if it's really hot, people would go out to the bazaars and, you know, try to shop, try to have some ice cream. And our favorite place was really go to the park and try to just enjoy the weather, because evenings are a little bit cooler. Summer or winter, it's not as, you know, kind of evenings like here, you can always go out. So that was usually what our evenings would turn out to be.
Do you know about the temperature in Fahrenheit? Was it about 100, or what kind of, how hot was hot?
It's so hot. It's sometimes it's 125. Oh, and that's, to be very honest, it's not very, very unusual. So the part that I'm from in Pakistan is actually known to be hotter. So 125, 120 was very, very common.
Region was that?
Multan, Pakistan. It's right near the center. So there's a lot of farmland. People generally think of it as a desert, but not a lot of desert. Actually, a lot more farmland. But for example, if we got down to the 90s, that was actually an ideal temperature. So that's when everyone would be out, out in parks, just out in the different bazaars, in market, because that was cooler. It was so much nicer. It was 90 out instead of 120. So that was the time. That was a little bit better of a temperature for most people.
Oh, you got to work with what you've got. It's like in Arizona, the road crews work at night or early in the morning, but they don't work in the afternoon.
Definitely. Yeah. You know, even doctors and you know, working professionals, they would be home because it's way too hot to really be outside.
Right. And maybe you didn't sleep well when it's so hot, and so you need a nap in the afternoon.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's very interesting. So when you first came to Maine as an 8-year-old, it's such an impressionable time. What stood out most for you?
Well, I think that stood out was really the environment. That was the thing that stood out by far. As I mentioned, just kind of what the environment was like in Pakistan, in a lot of farmland. But I mainly grew up in a city. Multan is a city of about 6 million people, so it's not a small town. But coming to Standish, Maine, from Multan, Pakistan, that the environment was the biggest difference. I grew up. I mentioned it's not a lot of desert, but there's not a lot of trees. It's a city, and there's a lot of infrastructure. But here, it was just all trees. I recall my home, everything was so remote. I couldn't just go to my corner store anymore down the street. That was the biggest thing that I noticed. The environment was very different.
And a real car culture.
Yes, definitely. Exactly, car culture. Before coming, you would ride in rickshaws or buses. There's not a lot of uses for automobiles, but here definitely a lot more of that. The other thing that I kind of took away was actually people were very kind. I had a very positive experience coming to Maine. A lot of times people will really struggle, and even though I was living in Standish, it was a huge culture shock. I had never seen snow before. Everything in my house was very different. That was something that was definitely a challenge. I didn't speak English. All those were definitely challenges, but people were very welcoming and very kind. So that was a huge positive for me, and created a really supportive environment. I recall the first day of school, I couldn't speak a word of English, maybe knew one or two words. I couldn't really put a sentence together. I was just sitting. I was looking around because even the ceiling and my classroom was different from how it was in Pakistan. I can't really describe how much of a difference it was. And I recall one of my who would eventually become one of my friends. He came up. There was a boy, and he came up. He said, "Would you like to play kickball with us tomorrow?" And I said, "Definitely." Yeah. So that he was who was somebody who kind of helped me make a little bit more friends, and this was in third grade, I felt really welcomed that this boy had invited me, and now from there I could make a few friends in school.
But that was a huge
was very, very helpful for me, because I really felt really included at that point, and that was true for my class and most of my teachers as well. People were really kind, and I really enjoyed that part of it.
I'm so glad, but I think that a lot of that is how extroverted and friendly you are.
Oh,
it's easy to include you. You make it easy. When you went to University of Southern Maine and you were a very active member of the Muslim Student Association, it grew to more than 40 members. And I wondered if you could tell us about the kinds of thing your club was working on that made a difference here at USM. Mm-hmm.
So when we started up the Muslim Students Association, I would say it started with an incredible amount of passion. Myself, a few other Muslim students, we were really looking for an avenue to be active in a civic way, and we had a great advisor, a faculty at USM, Reza Jalali. He was our advisor, and he was the one who kind of helped us put the whole group together. And as you mentioned, it grew to about 40 students. So our initial goal, as I mentioned, it started with a great deal of passion. It was a way for us to find an outlet to be engaged in a civic way. But it was also to help create more inclusive university services. So some of the things that we focused on was that there was no halal food, for example, on campus. A lot of students would have to go off campus, a lot of the Muslim students especially, to even have a meal in between classes. A lot of times for prayer, there was a small prayer room. There wasn't really, only one or two people could really be in there at a time. So there was a need for a bigger prayer room that was more centrally located and open for a longer number of hours. The one that we had prior, it was only open until I think 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon. And most of the students were there later in the evening. So it was those kinds of things that to help make sure that it was an inclusive environment. And the last but real major focus for us was if you look at the media and you look at news, the way Islam is described, it's not very positive generally. And myself and a few other students at USM thought, Muslim students thought that that we had to be a little bit more proactive in clarifying the message or what Islam is supposed to be from our perspective, because we do, a lot of times people see immigrants as temporary folks, as people that might be here for a little while, but there's a significant Muslim community and most of those students will be here. So if there are negative perceptions, we wanted to be proactive in helping deal with them. So we put together a program called Ask a Muslim, which was just an informal opportunity for someone to come and ask about Islam and demystify some of the concepts that people have, which were vastly different from what our perception of Islam was. And then there was opportunities for us to highlight students as well. So our goal was to focus on various religions, but to have students be the ones that were actually explaining what those religions were. So we put together quite a few community events from there as well, and tried to engage USM leadership to see that this was a target group of students that was very active, wanted to be very active, had a great deal of energy, and was a growing demographic at USM, and could be, if we were to help create a more inclusive environment, could be a huge resource for us. So that was, I would say, there was quite a few things that we were hoping to accomplish by helping start this group. But our main focus was to help create a more inclusive environment for USM students, especially Muslims that felt kind of excluded. They didn't feel like they were part of the mainstream, and that's what we were hoping to do.
I think that's really important work, and who knows the kind of groundwork that lays for future people thinking about coming to USM, both students and faculty. You know, you may have somebody that thinks, I just can't work there because there's no place to pray and there's no halal food. And you've made that, you've raised a lot of consciousness. So kudos to you all. Do you think we're talking about 100 Muslims on campus or 1,000 Muslims on campus? What do you have a ballpark figure?
I think I don't know if it's closer to 1,000, but I think it's over 500 students at least. Prior, when this was 2016, I believe, there was a 33% increase in Muslim students coming to USM or new minor students coming to USM. And that was the only demographic at that time that actually grew. I recall that because that was actually my first year being in the being part of the Muslim Students Association and being part of student government at USM. And that was the only demographic that was actually growing. So I think the number is around 500 or so Muslim students right now, but it's the only demographic that's going to continue to increase both in Maine and at universities such as USM. And this is really valuable for these institutions because this is the demographic that's going to keep them sustainable over the long run.
Which is why it's so strategic and smart to invite your leaders to come and meet you all and to dispel any myths and to work together, because you're kind of the future of USM. It's the only growing demographic at the university. Fabulous. Good work. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Hamza Khan. He was originally from Pakistan, but grew up in Standish, Maine, attended university, and now works for Bangor Savings Bank as a talent and diversity specialist, which is a super cool title. I wondered if you could fill us in on what a talent and diversity specialist is all about at your bank.
Yeah, definitely. So this is a new position to the bank. It's myself and our director of talent, diversity, and inclusion, David Peace. So we're a department of two, and I've been asked this question definitely quite a few times. It's a new title, and when you think of someone who's in commercial lending, you kind of have an idea they're dealing with businesses and managing those kinds of things for a bank. But what does a talent diversity specialist do? Our focus is really helping attract top talent to the bank that's coming from diverse backgrounds, and for us to foster an inclusive environment around them. Kind of to really break that down, our goal is to make sure that anyone, no matter who you are, regardless of your demographic, can come and work for us. So there's no sort of hindrance to an ability for people to come work for us, because we know our communities are changing. people from all sorts of backgrounds are coming into Maine. And the other focus is to be able to leverage those skills and those backgrounds. And that's why we want to help create an inclusive environment. So with this new department and these two new positions, the bank has three major sort of focus area that we're hoping to focus on. One is to help create a sustainable talent supply for us. So we know that with folks, both, you know, new miners coming in, but also a significant amount of younger folks leaving the state, that talent is going to, there's going to be shortages of talent. And we want to make sure as a bank, as an institution, but also throughout in Maine and New Hampshire in our communities, we want to make sure that there's a sustainable source of talent for ourselves and also for businesses in our community. So that's one aspect of it. The second aspect is around workplace belonging, and our focus is to make sure that we're an inclusive environment, and that, we're, as I mentioned, that anyone that comes and works for us can be their authentic self and can be who they want to be in the workplace. And there's no limitations because of your background and various forms of diversity. And as I mentioned earlier, our focus is also workforce development. So both in Maine and New Hampshire, our goal is to make sure that those states have sustainable workforces. So broadly speaking, that's the focus that we have. And then under each sort of section, we're focusing on our talent and diversity plan. We're involved in quite a few workforce development related initiatives as well. And our focus is really to make sure that anyone, regardless of their diversity, can come work for us, and we have an inclusive environment for them to work in.
That's very planful, you know, and you're really responding to the realities of life in Maine, and you have an eye on the future. So not only will you in human resources be facing shortages. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that you're ready to receive whatever good talent comes your way.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yep.
That's good planning. Tell us more about your work for mm-hmm. fostering inclusive community in the workplace. Exactly how do you do that in human resources?
That's a great question. And I think that's where the field is moving more and more so. It's about kind of taking a strategic perspective. For Bangor Savings Bank specifically, and really just out in the community, for Bangor Savings Bank specifically, we've focused on a couple of things around diversity and inclusion. One has been a company-wide training. So we've implemented a training called Green Dot, which is focused on a bystander strategy for bullying or harassment in the workplace. So that's where our conversation really started, as to, you know, how can you, what role does a employee play in being a bystander and making sure that their workplace is safe and inclusive for all of their coworkers.
When you did your work for USM and you were doing the Ask a Muslim kind of thing, mm-hmm. you probably got to hear people's questions that they have that surprised you, mm-hmm. which probably helps you in this setting. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example of a question someone might ask that is really one of, you know, ignorance or just curiosity and mm-hmm. not knowing?
I'll give you an example. For example, about the hijab. A lot of folks have a lot of misconceptions about the hijab. One of the questions I think we actually probably, it kind of came up in our conversation, is someone might come up to a Muslim female. I haven't personally seen this, but I've certainly seen it with my sister, my females in my family, or females that might be friends, but even at USM, where they might be asked, you know, you're in America, you don't need to wear the hijab anymore. And that's a fair point. You know, everyone has that choice. And that person might be coming from a really good place, because it is true in some areas, women are forced to wear hijabs. That's certainly true, but it might not be true here. And there's a great deal that people kind of need to know about the hijab a little bit more, where it comes from, what the sort of the idea behind it is. And a lot of times, if women will practice it if they want to practice it. And it's not something that is forced on people. So I think that was one of the things, or situations similar to that are ones that really kind of stick with me, is people that are even good intentions, or might be just kind of out of naivety or without really researching the problem further, people could have that kind of mindset that someone's being oppressed, or someone is being negatively affected, when that's not necessarily the case, and it's just from a lack of understanding of tradition and where the practices come from.
Yeah, so that's terrific that your bank's proactive, and mm-hmm. not only would that change the way they would treat a colleague in a hijab, but probably a client in a hijab.
Exactly. And that's really the goal for us through these activities, is to help create an inclusive environment for our customers and our employees as well, and to make sure that our communities are safer and inclusive. That happens. I would say that those kinds of misunderstandings happen often, where people will have a perception, and without really researching it further, they kind of draw conclusions. And that was really our goal with things such as the Ask a Muslim or events that we did, community events that we did, was to have open engagement and give people an opportunity to ask us straightforward questions. And one
it's courageous on your part, though, because it's a little bit of an othering, mm-hmm. and it would be easy to see why people didn't want to do that, and that's okay. But the people that come forward and are willing to be cultural brokers and mm-hmm. answer beginner questions, mm-hmm. it's really generous for the people that are needing the answer to the question, mm-hmm. as well as future people who.
That's true, and one of
the path is laid then.
And one of the things I'd like to highlight is if you think about it. The best way to describe diversity, if you were to define the word diversity, it's the spectrum of human behavior. And the way I see it is there's so many cultures that I don't know anything about. I don't know much about folks that come from sub-Saharan Africa, as an example. I have some friends, but I certainly need to learn more. But if I see a tradition where I kind of look at it and I'm not understanding why someone might be doing this. One of the things that I know from myself is I need to be more inquisitive and learn about that, because if someone is doing a tradition or doing a ritual, something that they feel really is important to them, they're not probably doing it because they don't like themselves. They're doing it because of their tradition is something that's actually valuable to them.
How do you do that? How do you answer that question then yourself?
So I really, one of the things I like to do is simply observe and try to understand where the tradition is coming from. And for me personally, I really like history, so that's where I usually connect with someone. If I see a tradition, I try to find the history behind or where it originates from, and that for me is usually a way to understand why things are being done the way they are.
Is that when you use your friend Google?
Oh, our friend at Google as well. Google certainly helps.
Yeah. That's great. And so you're also doing some work with low-income youth. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that project?
Yes. So this is part of some of the workforce development stuff that Bangor Savings Bank is involved in. A program through USM, Muskie School, is called Gateway to Opportunity. And just as kind of a background for the program, it's a partnership between businesses and nonprofits. And the goal for it is, as you mentioned, to bring in low-income youth and offer a workplace opportunity or an ability for them to enhance their work readiness skills prior to entering the job market or prior to going to college. And that program, the reason why I wanted to kind of share that background is because that's how really workforce development can take place. It's if we as employers, as members of the community, nonprofits, government agencies, if we work together. Because when we're talking about workforce and the amount, the sort of the gap that Maine is looking at, 165,000 jobs is a number that's been thrown around. That's not something that we as individuals can take on. It's really something that's going to be done in partnership. So the Gateway to Opportunity is a program that we're a host site for and have been for 2 years now. And program's been around for, I believe, for about 4 years, where we host high school students. And our goal, as I mentioned, is to help create a work readiness environment for them. This year, one of the things we were focusing on creating a video project, and it was an opportunity for students to also gain professional development opportunities. And we did quite a few tours of our banks as well. I think it was a really great sort of learning environment for students for us. Another thing that we're involved in is Hire a Vet, which is a program for veterans through Maine State Maine Department of Labor, and the goal of the program is really to increase more veterans in the workplace. And we're involved in quite a few other programs, whether it's New Mainers or working with as I mentioned, veterans, folks from the LGBTQ+ community, various other other sort of target groups as well, to help make sure that we're finding new ways of engaging those groups. A lot of times organizations will simply try to hire from those demographics, which kind of makes sense in certain ways, but it also, I think one of the things, the problem is really how are we attracting that talent? And we're trying to find really new ways of, whether it's through workforce development or through just partnership with community partners, to finding new ways of engaging those talent sources.
I think you're a natural fit for that position because you know how to observe and create a culture that's safe, mm-hmm. and then hire, because it's going to stick if there's a real welcoming place, not that's just mm-hmm. throw them on a team.
That's true. And it's oftentimes a detriment to the individual and the organization, because
if they're not well received.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. It's not a safe environment for them, and they're not getting a lot of the support that they need.
Wow. I'm impressed that you all are taking such proactive strides to do that. So why would a workplace go to the effort and expense to hire a person to build a more inclusive environment? I think you just answered some of that. You've got staffing issues in the future, but there's more to it.
There definitely is, and I think it's about doing the right thing. I think that's where the conversation really began for Bangor Savings Bank, and is true for quite a few other organizations that are hoping to be involved in similar work. It really is about doing the right thing. So, you know, we don't want to have an environment where people are being limited because of their background or if they're their experienced areas that they, or things that they've been involved in, because that's a loss for us. That individual is a huge asset as an individual, and our goal is really to make sure that we're a safe environment that can leverage all forms of talent.
Here's to humanity. Hamza, you are a passionate and engaged natural advocate. I wish you all the best as you continue to create organizational capacity to make any demographic feel welcome to work here in Maine. Thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, you can visit newmainerspeak.com. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Hamza has selected for us. Can you tell us a little bit why you chose this song before we turn it on?
Definitely. So this is a song of poetry from Jalaluddin Rumi, the great Persian scholar. And it's a dedication from him to his spiritual master, spiritual guide, Shams Tabriz. It's being sung by Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, who's a Pakistani famous singer. So I hope you enjoy.
Perfect. Thank you.